Hello for Thursday, September 10th, 2020. You're listening to Laying It Down with the Low. Premiere episode, special guest, Diamond Jim Groom. Theme music by Aaron Copland from the film The Heiress. I hope you enjoy.
The thinking around managing that is small right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's small thinking, you know, and I think it's too bad because, you know, there's a lot of cool shit to do.
Well, if you think there's schlock on Straw Boss, you're talking about it. Schlock writ large, what you're describing there. So there's a lot of space for fun and creativity, but you got to run. Get right with immigration, buddy.
I will. Thank you, Scott Lowe. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Let's do it. Bye for now. And we're going back to the music.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're not back with Turk Murphy. Frequent listeners might recognize one of the three or four go-to music beds that I keep in the... what do they call this? This is not a deck. This is a... It's called a sampler. Mix application has up to 16 samplers. I've just got 4. I should do a screen capture. Anyhow, thank you, Jim Groom. Always nice to talk. Got a few more songs at least coming up, just because that coffee energized me a little bit. And I got to write a few ideas down based on that talk. So keep it tuned right here. I'll be checking the Twitter. And if you want the stream, well, by all means, give us a holler.
It's time for the Longines Chronoscope, a television journal of the important issues of the hour. Brought to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. A presentation of the Longines Whitnor Watch Company, maker of Longines, the world's most honored watch, and Whitnor, distinguished companion to the world-honored Longines.
This evening's guest is one of the most distinguished ladies in American life, Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt.
Mrs. Roosevelt, some nights ago, I had dinner with a man and his wife in Spokane, Washington. Quite sincerely, but quite seriously, they asked me 2 questions. They said, "Do these foreigners hate us as much as they seem to? And are they ever going to be grateful for the things that we do for them?" Now, you've just come back from one of your latest trips in far parts of the world. Could you answer those questions?
Well, I would not say that foreigners hated us. I would say that many of them were a little suspicious that they did not like to feel that everything they wanted to do, they had to ask us for our help. Or some of it would come from the United Nations, and they liked that better because they were members, they felt they got it by right, and there was no one individual nation that they had to depend on. But I would say that it was always hard to be grateful for something which you felt you would like to have be able to do without asking anyone.
Well, Mrs. Roosevelt, we've heard a lot about criticism of American policy and what we have done or tried to do. Is this something new?
No, I think it began probably when the war was over and we began to have to help people to build up again. And we were the ones who had not been bombed and who had no homes destroyed. We had difficulty in getting new homes, but we didn't have to clear away acres of rubble of old homes that once existed. And we had our whole production unit intact, and practically no other nation in the world was in that fortunate position.
In other words, this is history rather than policy.
History rather than politics.
Okay. So, Jim, we can hear each other, but you're not on the radio yet. Let me turn on the hijack block.
I'm just happy to be here.
Have you had breakfast yet?
Coffee. I just got coffee.
Okay. Well, good morning to you. Good morning, Italy.
Good morning, Pacific.
You've missed some good disco music.
What's going on over there?
Oh.
I'm sure I did.
It's, yeah. It's like... It's same as
it's
California.
Like Blade Runner 2050.
Yeah.
With the pictures I'm seeing.
I've noticed Gina's tweeting, and it sounds like she's got a more dire situation, that water is not available. I don't quite understand the whole story there, but it sounds rough. Plus the smoke, and where's the fire
going to be? Slumlord. She's like, the slumlord's holding out, and then the fire is even moving towards Crescent City, which is just, you know, that's like verdant green area. That's like Oregon.
Yep.
So that's weird.
Yep. I was talking before you came on about the Mackenzie River Pass, which is just a beautiful drive. Like, you know, it's not the best in the world, but it's what we have, and we're all very much attached to it, and it's will never be the same. And homes destroyed, lives just uprooted, as happens, but, you know, it's... not supposed to happen here. You know, it happens in other places. But
yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Man, what a conflagration year. Like, just in terms of like coming to terms with, you know, how temporary this all is.
Whew. Yeah. Temporary, fragile, insignificant. These are some of the words that spring to mind. And in a sense, another sense, maybe a little different angle, just like the illusions are just sort of being ripped away, we sort of have to say, hey, whoa, shit is getting real, and it just can turn on a dime, as it seems to be here. An old friend of mine from college is flying up tomorrow. He's going to Portland with his fiance because they wanted to see the protest, and then they were going to come down to Eugene and hang out. I'm saying, well, the sky's kind of smoky. It's kind of weird. He goes, well, it's the same thing down here.
That's cool, though.
Yeah, it'll be nice to see Joe.
And life goes on, right? Like, that's the other thing. It's like, you know, the shit hits the fan, but you still got to go about and do stuff. I don't know.
Well,
such a weird thing.
I'm glad you said that, because fortunately I am just finding stuff to me that's both fun and seemingly productive to do, and can take my mind off of a whole other bunch of matters that could be worrisome or anxious moments. And it's a new experience to be able to turn positively towards something that feels good to do, and then also finally accomplishing it and saying, oh, that's not total shit. I actually it's halfway decent, you know. So that's cool. I'm not used to it, but I can get used to it.
I've been living in that bubble for a while. I'll give you a quick example why I'm up late, and then we can talk about, you know, the main attraction. But
whatever.
So yeah. Last night I woke up, I don't know, I was trying to go to bed around 1. I watched a really good movie, The Heiress by William Wyler.
Okay.
And then I was like, oh, this is great. And then I kind of jerked around in my office for a bit, until I went to sleep. And then I went in and tried to go to sleep. And then I had these, like, I was like driven by these thoughts about how I need to kind of compile my C64 C128 Commodore computer so that I can actually have it in a place in my office that's usable. So I get up and I spend the next hour like rejigging my whole VHS archiving C64 setup. Like there's no use of any of this stuff. Like, it's just completely like throwaway, but fun to have.
Yeah.
But like, I'm obsessing on this stuff. In a way that I think is just that. It's a way to not think about other stuff
and still
feel like I'm connecting to a time where things seemed a little bit normal, even though they weren't.
Well, at least there's the aspect of it's, one could say that there's Jim Groom, the Bava, living life as performance, and people notice it and observe it and are befuddled. Certainly I'm still trying to get a sense of all these VHS tapes that you're capturing in analog time. And somebody gave you a box of VHS.
Yeah. Someone gave me a suitcase full at a conference. And literally, like, she's like, take the suitcase, throw it away. And then I had a collection of Italian ones I've been collecting here anyway that are dubbed Italian.
Yeah. Awesome.
Like, a lot of American films dubbed Italian. And I have, like, a wall full now that I've been, even just, like, the last 2 weeks. In fact, what I did last night is I set up a second VHS deck.
Jeez.
And I'm going to have a second computer that's going to archive. So I'm going to work double time now. because I have thousands. And so I want to make it a thing to see how many I can get done in the next year.
Can you?
And I think I could do 3 or 4 a day times 2, so maybe 8 a day.
Yeah. Well, that, again, that's analog time. It's just got to be put in. But I'm wondering, I just, you know, help me with the goofy ideas. This would totally mess up your process, so don't take it too seriously. But somewhere, I imagine there would be output from those. Well, yeah, because you're digitizing it, so you're sending it to a computer. So you could actually have that video going into a mixer of some sort and have like a live mix of whatever you're capturing and then broadcast it out, but do experimental weird mixes of that stuff plus animated GIFs and whatever and talk over it.
It could just that be would be fun, total actually. Mind I fuck, should wouldn't it? Do that because I have the feed. I can easily do that on DS106 TV.
Yeah.
But the other thing is I have all of these things going right to a server in Virginia, which is the Reclaim TV server, which means that this is all being propped up for what I want to build is an online VHS store where you can go into the store or go online, and then the title you see is actually archived online. VHS quality with the box and everything so that you could actually play it. And no one, I think it's an interesting go around copyright too, because the quality is really not very good. And so I don't think like there's going to be a, you know, with the kind of UHD 4K Blu-ray, like everyone's going to see my copy of like Braveheart and be like, ugh, like that's disgusting. And so like, I kind of like that. It's like that low quality thing. Anyway, so
there's going to be somebody trying to grab 0.5% off of that.
Maybe.
Just okay. We won't bother you about copyright if you just give us the envelope.
I don't care, frankly. And the other thing is like I'm inspired by your recent post and the whole schlock around the clock.
Inspired because
that whole schlock around the clock schedule is exactly kind of what I want. Like, I want some kind of like playlist groups like the EXPTV thing with this kind of schedule that, you know, you can kind of put that stuff in. And I'm going to have hours and hours of videotapes, which is the idea, and not just movies. And the idea is I can't do it now because it will be incomplete and whatever, but
sure.
kind of want to feel like, although I could go to the Internet Archive and be even more smarter. But, like, I want to have it so that I can say that this is, like, a process that will run for 24/7 at a point. Like, it gets launched, and I have enough programmed and enough in there that I can kind of watch it go and then program out a few months. So that's the idea, which is why I'm doing it all now. I have about 1,000 or so that I've archived.
Jeez.
So I think I can get more. But that was a year of work.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask why, because that's not the question to ask. I'm both tickled and touched that you used the word inspired, and I'm pleased with that visual of just the circle, the wheel, because, you know, looking at the schedule grid, it's like any table with 7 columns, one for each day, and when it's 24 hours, it's so big, there's no way it could be a tweetable image. But if you take that 12 or 24 hours and make it a circle, and just it's going to repeat every day. And then the next step, I'm sure you can imagine, it would just have, okay, so this circle is Sunday, the next circle is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah.
Choose your chunk. Choose your block. And then it actually is kind of a pretty good, you can get 1 week on a screen, can't you?
And you did this really fast. Like, as you said in your post, like, what I'm really inspired by the work you've done with Straw Bus Radio, which is, for those listening, Scott Lowe basically propped up and built his own radio station using, you know, audio from the Internet Archive, which sits there. And so it kind of it's reinvigorated with life.
Mm.
And then on top of these feeds that he's pulling in, he's now started to create and shape and sculpt a kind of sense of an identity for the station. And I think that's what's hard to wrap your head around, and what you've done really well, and it's helped me, is the stuff is there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even true with a TV station or a radio station. It's the stuff can come in and out, and it's good. Don't get me wrong, but it's the identity you use to shift that stuff and to create this sense of a straw boss. In fact, I saw Layla Cosmic say, and this is the first time I think I've said it, maybe besides me, that someone said, that should go in the straw boss. Like, that's material for the machine, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I think that what I'm seeing with this post is really nice, because it's like you're starting to like sculpt out what the station is. And the brilliant thing is it's kind of automated in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really, I mean, I'm really digging what you're doing, and I love the way you're doing it.
Well, I'm glad you noticed that. I'm glad you noticed, and it's very parallel to what you were just describing about the video. You know, there's got to be a sound or a look that's always there. And in a sense, it doesn't matter. I listen to it, not around the clock, but for hours on end, but most people won't. So I'm hearing the same songs come up. But people are going to pop in because they saw a blog post, or hopefully other people have come and taken a chunk. So Joe Blow in Dubuque's got, you know, a 90-minute chunk three times a week. He's going to tell his people, and they're going to come, and they might say, well, what's this Straw Boss Radio? You know, what are you doing? What are you doing radio? You can do radio? It's that easy? And then, one other thing, just while I may, because there was one of these chats with some UK-based educational-focused group with technology, and they just had questions and answers. And I never participate in these things, but a couple of people that I follow did, so it showed up on my screen. And they had this lovely picture, old black and white picture of some dude up next to a radio set. He's either talking into the microphone or listening through the ear horn. He can't quite tell because it's a little out of focus. Then the question was like, how are we going to cope with the technology for our teaching and learning online? And there were some very nice answers, and I just popped in and said, well, this looks like a radio. This image suggests radio being used. So what I would like to see, or what I'm dreaming about, is exploring using radio to deliver across both time and distance. Some weird Scottlow type phrasing of it, just as this comment. It didn't get any feedback or not, but what I'm saying is that's what I'm trying to think about. What could a teacher or a couple of teachers do in terms of asynchronous content that's playing around the clock, just to have the students listen to something, and then if it works for the students to produce their own thing, their commentary or whatnot, there's the on-demand availability, so the student creates a file, they put it up there, and it's on demand, so the teacher can download it, doesn't have to come at the playlist time. You know what I'm saying? But
I do.
I'm not an ed tech guy, but I don't know if people are imagining this way, but it just seems so natural and easy. But then again, look how many hours we've put into it trying to figure it out. So it's not simple, but it actually is simple.
Your work there is important, because, I mean, just even the whole, you know, how to Azura cast with the little book and your, you know, 50s aesthetic, which is so great, Azura cast and you, and then, you know, you got the Scottlow icon. It's just, it's beautiful. And then you're playing with time and the recording that you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think your point is actually, I think you're right about, you know, organizations or educational institutions using this more constructively. I think that's true. And I think I've even seen evidence of it. Whereas the alt, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go for it.
Let me just close this. So there's a group called Alt in the UK, which may be the group you're referring to, may not be.
Different group, but similar focus.
But basically, they want to get up and running with a radio station for their conference and just for connecting remotely.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of DJs in their organization. And Alan Levine has been talking with another organization, OU Global, about using radio for their conference. And so, like, I think I built a one-click installer with Tim's help so that AzuraCast is at least easier to install. And then now that you're doing the documentation and we can maybe put some of that stuff in place, like the playlist stuff is huge. Mm-hmm. You're talking about the on-demand. Yep. I got to get Web DJ working with DS106 Radio. That's still on me.
Yeah.
But apart from that, like, I agree. Like, sure, you got to figure out any technology. We had to figure out WordPress when that came to higher ed, and it took off. And whether radio will take off or not, that's not for me really. That's we'll see. I don't see why it shouldn't, given, you know, the video thing. Like, I think there's a lot of good arguments for some good soundscape productions of our world right now. low bandwidth, you can do other things, you know. I think there's a lot there, but I think this is fun because you have, in my mind, based on what you've done with DS-106 radio and based on all the other stuff you've done well before that, come up with a kind of like a model and an example, because that's always what people need. Mm-hmm. You, educators, students, you know, anyone outside that field, they need to see how someone thought of it, how someone organized it, how someone put it into practice, what were the possibilities there. And without that, it's just like, yeah, radio's great. And then they don't have anything to go on. But where you say, no, here's radio's great. Here's what I'm doing to pull content in. Here's how I'm kind of breaking in. Here's how we're building playlists. Here's how we're allowing people to download stuff. Here's how we're blocking off time for different groups. Like, why wouldn't a school right now, beyond like an organization, brilliant. I think alt's brilliant. But like if I were a university, I would be vertical horizontal. I would be TV and radio. I would really just be like picking from my talent and the students, and they would be producing stuff remotely. And like everything would be shifting towards what you're learning is pushing out towards building a network for the university. And I would like completely double down on the idea of, you know, we have the means, we have the technology, and we have the resources to produce and shape content and knowledge. And that's what we should do. And by coming to this university, you're not just learning, but you're building. And it would be like that. Like that would be the school. And I would be like, I don't give a shit where you are. We'll fund you for actually good tech. We'll give you some of the tech. We'll have these, you know, groups where you do research and you report back. And like, I would turn our university into basically like a channel. You know, I know it sounds,
it doesn't.
Bad, but it's not. Like, it is actually like where I would go right now. And there would be some limitations, but you could do a lot with the community. You could do a lot with what we're talking about. Because look, a good radio station, think about WFMU or KEXP or whatever, like that's a cultural hub. And that's what these universities, I think, have foregone with a lot of the approach they've done to online right now. And it's too bad because they have all of that expertise and all of that kind of like refined knowledge that has never been more important.
Let me jump in. There's so much to say, and one thing that occurred to me, it might sound silly, but I'm enjoying having a serious conversation with you for a change rather than all over the cosmos and inner space and outer space, which is also fun, but this is fun in a different way. But I'm reminded when you're talking about the actual physical university or a university, realizing there's an interesting possibility here. This came up in a conversation with Anne-Marie and Julia and Shahira a while back where we were just sort of touching bases. We've got a little sort of group where we're trying to think of some things with Strawboss and other radio stuff and DS-106, of course. But Julia was saying that she had decided to check out a university terrestrial radio station in her area and listen to it. But the idea from there that I'm sort of piggybacking on or trying to appropriate is that many of the universities and communities across North America, United States, got radio licenses in the 20s or 30s and have maintained their call sign. And there is that established tradition. And probably on the campuses, there's probably an archive somewhere with the school's radio history. You know what I mean? Because it was serious shit. It was serious shit in the 30s and 40s, radio and education and learning for a career in radio. And that's perhaps part of where we can find the teaching materials for how to do radio today, you know, sort of borrowing that. And it builds a sort of legitimacy, and it's also serving a community interest, but with voices from anywhere in the world. Right?
I exactly. Like, yes, when I was at Mary Washington for 10 years, one of the places I was most intrigued by, and I did a fair amount of my earlier work with EdTech around, with no, like, really no one else cared, was in the archive.
Yeah.
Like, they had an archive of a civil rights professor. They had VHS tapes of a season, quote unquote, of him teaching a course that I still have archived. I should bring them out. Of, like, a real, like, James Farmer. He's a major figure in the civil rights movement. And like, they weren't doing anything with a lot of this audio, video, images. You know, they were sitting there and they were like, well, we got to get it in a repository. And I was like, God, repository is the death of your history. Like, why don't you build this into like the courses? And they ultimately did, and there was some cool stuff done. But like, universities, by their very definition, have these institutional archives that are as rich as anything in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they're oftentimes, like, you know, so focused on the production of this new idea of the student, you know, that pays X amount and that provides them with, you know, the coffee and the walls they need to climb. And yep. I, both literally and figuratively.
Yep.
And
yep.
it just bores the shit out of me. And I feel like that's where popular culture in the 80s and 90s and probably more, maybe 70s and 80s more than the 90s, given 90s started to fragment with cable, really had like a sense of an identity and a way of selling itself and understanding how the world worked. And I think that that's something that universities like obviously shunned for obvious reasons, given that, you know, it was the commercial popular, you know, TV is the idiot box.
Yep,
but
yep.
I think now that everything universities are going to be doing is in some way streamed based on the format and metaphor of TV, it's a strange, beautiful irony. And I still go back, as we all have, and it's nothing new, to like community radio, like Freeform, but then community TV.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I just think, like, when I think about what's happening with students right now, either on campus being like, you know, shamed for partying or everybody, like, it just sounds like a nightmare opportunity to be a student right now. Like, I would rather, like, you know, chew glass than be a student, it sounds like, in the U.S.
Yeah.
And I think, like, turn that on its head. Like, actually, like, use this as a major opportunity to, like, invest in production. One of the things we were talking about with Andy Rush, and I'm sorry, I'll shut up.
No.
Tim and I are building a TV studio. Like, that's the next thing. And so Tim is already probably done on Friday.
Is he painting the green screen? Tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
We got the equipment. It's going to be bitching. It's going to be like our DTLT studio, but better. And cheap. And the thing that Andy Rush was talking about, and that it was kind of really fascinating, is that like that equipment, whether it be audio equipment for radio or video equipment, is now relatively cheap and accessible. And I do believe that like this stuff is very, I don't know, it's like the moment, like the gamers. The gamers invented in some ways most of the innovations that came with streaming online, with capturing that stuff, with creating these channels where their personalities, and like, these are major influencers. My son, Tommy, has learned how to program, has learned how to do like so many things. And he's a particular case. I'm not, I know all kids don't learn like this, but there is structured learning happening there. It's not just like, oh, they're out in the wild. No, these people have imagined, there's one called the Chosen Architect, who's a Minecraft architect, who has curriculum. Like, he has 54 hours of YouTube curriculum for building worlds, complex worlds in Minecraft. And it's all video based.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy is a personality. He's basically doing what you're doing with Straw Boss, but for teaching kids how to use Minecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, like, this guy did this with $1,000 worth of equipment and some learning and training. And why aren't we like in the faculty's offices at home doing this? Like, that's where, or students, like, I would love to be like a house doctor doing home calls to say, like, here's how we're going to set up your office and here's how we're going to get you rigged up. And I just think it would be fun. But, you know, that's to me, I can think that because I'm on the outside right now looking in. I know there's some real immediate concerns that a lot of folks in the field are facing, and I have the freedom to feel that way, but I'm not against it. Like, I kind of am ready with Tim to fully embrace the video era.
Well, these times are so crazy, and it's almost as though we've been given license to think of other ways to do things and imagine. I'm curious, I'd like to ask, if you don't mind, if you can call it to your mind, this guy, the Minecraft architect. You mentioned something about his personality that he has. What is it that has led to his success? Is it does he seem to have a theory of learning, and that his content is designed to teach? Is it like a blatant lecture? I'm sure there's not PowerPoints, but what makes it both popular and effective that kids can, or anybody can, spend time with it and become better with building stuff in Minecraft? What's the secret sauce?
I think he screencasts what he's doing in Minecraft, mm-hmm. and he's good, and he has skills of building stuff. And so one of the things that Tommy learned from him that I sat in on this one is that he basically showed the kids how, or the kids, anyone using Minecraft, to basically build an oil well and to mine oil. Or it wasn't oil so much. It was basically like mining blocks for electricity. But like, they basically built a whole, like, you know, complex, what would you call it? Almost like here, like, you know, like in West Virginia, and they do that kind of that mining the mountain.
Right.
And like, but they did, they built a full blown mine, mm-hmm. and he would show them how, and here's what you do, and this is what you need. And, you know, by the end of it, the kids were looking back and they had built this huge contraption to convert, you know, this stone into some sort of, you know, resource that would fuel their, you know, their house 10 miles away in Minecraft land. And like, it was really like rewarding. Yeah. And so I think a lot of his stuff is built around actual objects to learn while you're doing, mm-hmm. and to build things. And then, because the Minecraft is interesting in that it parallels the real world in interesting ways in terms of circuits, mm-hmm. and engines, and like, you build stuff and the concept of what you build holds weight in the physical world, at least as an idea. So conceptually, it's a really powerful learning tool, you know. And Tommy understands more about circuitry and energy flows, mm-hmm. than he would otherwise because of, you know, these lessons in Minecraft. And I think the same thing happens on radio, right? Like, you could do great audio radio. I mean, we don't need to look too far for examples of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it would be fun. And I think of it in the big all-encompassing. But it doesn't have to be. We've seen this again and again. It can just be one small little thing. Mm-hmm. So that would be where I see stuff like the Straw Boss, you know, and what would universities do with an AzuraCast? I think they would make it a, rather than just class, although I think the class thing, but giving, like you have, the schlock around the clock, each class has a time when they can show off, and then you quickly, without doing much of a lifting of a finger as a university, given how many resources and people you have a full schedule.
Yep.
You know?
And then you got to showcase, potential to showcase stuff. But you're tight for time, I see, so I want to be sensitive to that. How you doing?
I do have to go. I have a meeting with immigration here.
Okay.
So we'll see how that goes. Because I'm actually coming back to the States for a couple of weeks And so I want to make sure I can actually get back to Italy once I'm done.
Oh, yeah. Quarantine, maybe, when you get back.
Oh, I don't care, though, because I quarantine anyway. I live in quarantine.
Sure.
Well, but we haven't even really talked about your stuff. You just let me rant on.
Well, it's been good. I would like to talk, and maybe you can help me shift my thinking. One final thought I'd just like to sort of pass on, it because it kind of connects to what you were describing with the possibilities that this Minecraft instructor is doing, and what I'm trying to do with these little talks and blog posts and tweet storms is I want it to have the effect of a tutorial, but not appear to be a tutorial. You know, that these training learning videos, there's just sort of an aesthetic that's evolved over time, which is somebody explaining how to do something. And sometimes it can be visually appealing, and sometimes it can be good. If it's what you're looking for, you'll overlook the poor production value. But is there another way to do it where it's kind of suggestive or example, as we were talking about before? So I don't know the path there, but that's kind of one of the areas I'm trying to explore to give learning that doesn't appear as teaching, provide learning that doesn't appear as teaching.
I think there's something to Because the Chosen Architects episodes aren't short, but there's a whole thing Mike Wesch has been talking about short kind of like, you know, video, like not more than 2 or 3 minutes to make a point, and then maybe put those together. And I mean, I think that depends. I think, you know, it depends on what you want, like who your audience is, and like kind of like smaller things around what to do with the Zoracast. But I love the way you play with time in your audio broadcast, and I love the way you layer it. And I think the layering of it on audio makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
And it just makes it more compelling. And I think whenever I listen to you, I am never like, oh, okay, what's next? Like, I'm ready to see what the reveal is. I'm pulled in. There's a story just in the kind of, you know, self-deprecating. I shouldn't be doing radio. I'm doing radio. Oh, my God, who's that? And then I'm in. You know what I mean? But I think that's a stylistic thing. I think there are formats that people think are good. But I think, like, one of the things that universities have over, you know, more consumptive-based media, you know, because a lot of that is in some ways funded by the students, is that they don't have to necessarily live within, you know, these formats that the market emerges. In fact, they can break some of those formats open, which is what's interesting, and it's what they should be doing with their research anyway. So, like, I think that still pertains to any of this stuff. And that's why everybody on the same format right now, doing the same things through Zoom calls and whatever, like, you know, just by nature of it, there's no distinction amongst these schools and their process. And it raises some real questions around what people are paying for, which I think is interesting. I don't necessarily agree with that argument, but I think it does raise some really interesting questions around, like, what is the proposition? Because we've already made it clear that students are customers. Mm-hmm. Like, that's our doing. So once we've done that, we put ourselves in a hole where now we have to please the customer or at least bow to it. And then that raises a whole bunch of bigger concerns. And I think the thinking around managing that is small right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's small thinking, you know, and I think it's too bad because, you know, there's a lot of cool shit to do.
Well, if you think there's schlock on Strawboss, I'm talking about it. Schlock writ large, what you're describing there. So there's a lot of space for fun and creativity. But you got to run. Get right with immigration, buddy.
I will. Thank you, Scott Lowe. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Let's do it. Bye for now.
Bye,
and we're going back to the music.
Well, Mrs. Roosevelt, this is you have become known as the leader of what is loosely called the liberal movement in this country, or what used to be called the liberal movement in this country, and some people call them do-gooders and the rest of it. Could you define a liberal for us? I mean, in your own words.
It's very hard to put in a few words what a liberal is, but I would feel that a liberal was a person who kept an open mind, was willing to meet new questions with new solutions, and felt that you could move forward. You didn't have to always look backwards and be afraid of moving forward.
And that's what this National Issues Committee that you're...
National Issues Committee is going to try to look at the issues.
I'd just as soon let this play, but it's got another 48 minutes to go. Former First Lady of the United States, Eleanor Roosevelt, into the mid-50s there. Appearing on the Longines Wittenauer public discussion program. I don't know that I have a point here. I clearly don't. Let me get things sorted out. I'm about to turn this thing off. But we need a grand finale, don't we? Problem is, I forget which window I'm in. Okay, this is going to have to do it. I got no grand finale in me. All I got is a very pleasant feeling. Just knowing that this is here, it's available. Anybody can get on any old time and howl into the night. Turk Murphy's Jazz Band taking us to the end with track B5.